Welcome to Eric's Perspective. Joining us today at M. Hanks Gallery is Berlinda Fontenot Jamerson, President and CEO of the Museum of African American Art. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for spending time with us today, and we look forward to talking about you and the museum. So to clear something up from the start, I know that in the past, in my experience, a lot of folks confuse the museum you're connected with the California African American Museum. So I just want to get this squared away. They're two different institutions.
They are two different institutions. In fact, the Museum of African American Art, our museum, is the oldest African American museum in Los Angeles. It's older. It precedes CAM. Our founder, Smella Lewis, just happens to be among a group of folks who were sort of the embryo for the creation of the CAM.
Yes.
But she founded our museum 2 years earlier than...
And so that would be, what year was that?
That was 1976.
Mm-hmm. So California African American Museum is located in Exposition Park, but the Museum of African American Art is located in Crenshaw Baldwin Hills Plaza, right?
That's right. And actually literally inside a fully operational Macy's department store.
And that's interesting in and of itself.
It's probably unique in the nation, I would think.
Yes. You know? So let's go back then, if you can, to explain to us a little bit about the history of Museum of African American Art.
Well, Dr. Lewis and a group of community leaders, other artists, art historians, educators, business people, came together to found a museum which presented art of and about African descent people and our contribution to world culture. So that was their dream and that was their mission.
And it actually began in Santa Monica, is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. They were there for a couple of years, and all this precedes my time, but they were there a couple of years, and I understand they moved to another location in sort of mid Los Angeles, Pico area. Mm-hmm. And then eventually she connected with some Macy's executives, she meaning Dr. Lewis, connected with some Macy's executives. They happened to be going through a transition in the building in Baldwin Hills on Crenshaw, and they were no longer selling furniture at that time. They were clearing out quite a large space, and they offered that up as a part of their community service and community outreach to Dr. Lewis and the Museum of African American Art. So we therefore have been in that space. It's grown over time,
yes,
but we have been in that space for 40 years.
40 years.
40 years inside of what is now Macy's. It was the predecessor stores in those days.
I think it was the May Company.
May,
right?
Company, right. Yeah. And then over time, it was Robinson, May, and then Macy's.
Right.
But yes, 40 years.
And just so everybody kind of gets a visual image, so this is the third floor of a three-story building, right?
Right. And the building itself is iconic. It is the first concept of what a mall would be in the nation, is that building and that plaza.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And how big is the space?
We now have about close to 15,000 square feet.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's quite big.
It is. Yeah. It is, actually.
Big.
It's always a big aha for newcomers who come through the doors, because first you got like a museum inside of an operational Macy's store.
Yeah, yes. Right, right.
And when they wander in, and, you know, mostly they're very delighted to see it.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So how did you get connected with the museum?
Well, I have a long history, as you may know, with corporate America, and one of my hats in those days was head of community relations for Sempra Energy, and I've done much of the same for some of the other corporations that I worked for. Mm-hmm. But during that stint as head of community relations, I was asked to be on the CAM board.
Oh, and California African American Museum.
That's right.
Yeah.
Way back when. And so I was there serving, and then now deceased Harvey Lehman, who was at that time board chair, mm-hmm. reached out to me. We knew each other from work in the community. He reached out to me and asked me to come over and join the Museum of African American Art Board. And I was like, thought about it for a while, said no for a while. We went back and forth. We're friends, you know. Mm-hmm. And so eventually he had me come over to a couple of the events going on and kind of look at their mission and their, you know, the vision for the museum and where we see it going and all that. And so I came over as a board member. Oh. And then along the way, I ascended to the presidency and then you know, that was 25 years ago.
Just a, right. And just as a side point, I remember dealing with Harvey.
Yeah.
And he was a wonderful person to work with. And passed away a few years ago? I can't remember.
Actually, I ran into his wife in the grocery store, believe it or not, not long ago. And she reminded me it's been close to 15 years.
15 years.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Because I kind of lost touch with him after a while.
Yeah. But he and his family were just super advocates for the Museum of African American Art.
Well, that's what impressed me about him. I just remember his enthusiasm. And, and what you said when we were, before we started this podcast, you were talking about being... you know, rolling your sleeves up. You're not just president or CEO. You're like really in there doing a lot of things. And that's the way I remember him too.
He was, you have to own it, you know.
Right.
And the kind of people who are involved, our board members, that's what we are. We're a working board. People bring their different skill sets to the table and lend it to the Museum of African American Art.
So what was it about the mission or even African American art just in general that was so attractive to you? Because I mean, this is a commitment. You're making a commitment.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's been a family commitment at that. But it's, I think, the closeness, the close touch to the community, more so than CAM. CAM is a state museum. It's a big museum. It's got big budgets, big staffs and all of that. And they have a wonderful mission, and their direction is different than ours, which is fine. I mean, there's plenty enough room in Los Angeles for many, many different kinds of museums, ethnicities, and everything else. So, but this one is close to the community. We're accessible to the community. We don't charge. The admittance is free. Parking is free. A place to go that's safe, where you can learn. And not to say you can't do that at the other museums. I'm sure that's part of their mission statements. But I think our accessibility, our availability, our touch, and try to be more in tune with the local community. And if you think about where we're located, we butt up against Leimert Park, Baldwin Hills, Central LA, and West LA, really Culver City. You know, we're right in the community where it's probably the most diverse economically and racially, ethnically, probably in the city.
Yeah.
And so here are different needs and interests. We certainly are in touch and very close to many, many schools, high schools and middle schools. There's at least 10 in the immediate area, 5-mile radius. Oh. And so I think just our ability to reach out and touch and to hear and to try to incorporate, and we can do it more easily because you don't have this, the process of a state museum to have to work through.
Right.
We can make decisions, we can make policy, and we can implement them right away rather than months down the road, or try to address the needs on a more immediate side.
I see. Yeah. So about African American art, are you a collector of art, would you say?
I am. I'm not an artist. I can't draw a straight line without a ruler. But I like what I like. Right. And I don't profess to be, you know, a curator, even though I have curated. So we have a board member who is a curator by trade. And we have other people who do things in the arts. But I do collect. I buy. In fact, my family's sick of me. Go to my house. My husband threatened me. Don't bring another art piece in this house again, you know.
Right,
but
right.
I just love. And I have my favorite styles. You know, I'm not. I'm more of a figurative kind of person. I like, you know, people and flowers and things that I can recognize. Mm-hmm. But I also appreciate, you know, abstract art as well, you know. So, and we at the museum, we reach out to not only the established artists, the well-recognized artists, but the emerging artists. And that's the other thing we do probably as well, if not better than most in the city, is that we do feature exhibits by emerging artists, people with no names who are great artists, just need to be able to show their work and to be able to get a start.
Yeah, that's always a challenge, you know, for an artist looking at it from the artist's point of view.
Exactly.
How do they get their work out there? And having a museum actually feature them is even ideal, I think, because a museum is an independent, at least supposed to be, an independent arbiter of what is should be considered as art and so forth. And
exactly.
So having that museum stamp of approval, it goes a long way.
It does go a long way. And I think, too, and you would know this, it's kind of tough to kind of weave through what is art. You know, I mean, how do you define what is art and what is museum quality art.
Yeah.
Whether it be by a new person or an established person.
Yeah.
That's so subjective. And so you, and when you're working with people, I personally don't want to discourage anyone, whatever your dream is.
Yeah.
You know, work it through, you know, and pursue it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if their dream is to be an established artist and I'm thinking, wow, I'd never buy this, you know, you know, that's, I, but that's me, because I understand that it's subjective, you know.
Right.
When I, what I'm looking at is, it's not, you know, bedded in concrete, and everyone has a flavor, if you will.
Sure.
So it's a matter. So we like to feature a variety. We'll mix it up so that the emerging artist gets a shot at it.
Yeah.
We have a team that selects the art when it comes, you know, who's going to be the next featured artist.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to rotate at least once a year, get one of the emerging artists in. And it's a process to even comb through those individuals who approach us. They just want to, could you, how can I get a show at your location?
You know? So do you get that a lot, by the way?
A lot. A very lot. You know, as my little grandkid says, a very lot, you know. And, you know, it's like you have to develop a skill set to kind of back people off, especially the ones who, you know, it won't work, at least at this point in time.
Right.
You know.
But as you say, though, I mean, a lot of times it is subjective, but and you think about, I think about, like, say, Vincent Van Gogh, you know, his brother couldn't even give away his artwork during his life. And yet he's respected as one of the greatest all time artists.
Right.
So I guess you can never really know for sure.
Right. Right. Well, we think about we have the Palmer Hayden Collection, which is a renowned Palmer Hayden is a renowned Harlem Renaissance artist. And we received that collection from his widow way back around 1970, a little after 76.
Yeah.
And as the story, I wasn't present, but I love the story about how when he passed away, his widow actually tried to give the art to the Smithsonian.
Mm-hmm.
And they declined it.
Yeah.
Because they didn't do ethnic art back in those days.
Right.
Well, fast forward. And who knew that they would have the Museum of African American History and Culture now in the...
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Know? And so they reached out to us a few years ago wanting to purchase four pieces. I won't mention the amount of money they offered, but it was quite a bit.
Quite a bit, yeah.
But we could not, because as a part of the trust, the Palmer Hayden Trust, we can't. It's in perpetuity.
Okay. You're not allowed, even if you wanted to, you could not sell the artwork.
Nope.
I should point out, though, that those pieces that you got from the Hayden Collection are really
stunning, aren't they?
I mean, for example, the famous John Henry series.
Yes.
Is perhaps the most coveted works of art by Palmer Hayden and most known. I mean, it was such a personal thing for him.
Yep.
To even paint that series.
To paint that series. And there's a park in, I believe it's West Virginia now,
mm-hmm.
that's dedicated to the... to John Henry.
Uh-huh.
And so we have a relationship with them where they have licensed some of the images and they've blown it up and they before they thought John Henry was a myth.
Right.
But in recent years, there's been discovery that artifacts and other things that substantiate that he actually existed.
And Henry was a real person.
A real person. And actually that real person, now there's three versions of who John Henry was. And so we've done an interesting show last year, and it's now being requested to put this thing on the road that tells the story of the three John Henrys. And it's like, which one do you believe? One of them, he was a criminal on a chain gang.
Oh, I hadn't heard that one before.
Yeah, the chain gangs were building the railroads.
Okay,
know?
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And then there's the traditional one, the Disney version, you know. Which is what? Which is that he's a superhero. Who just a working man who they paired up with a machine to see who could get through the tunnel first.
Oh, right, right.
And so that one is being made into a movie.
Oh, really?
Featuring The Rock.
And oh, no
I don't
kidding.
Know when they're going to release it, but he's going to be John Henry, you know.
Oh, wow.
So that's interesting. And then there's another one that's a hybrid of both of those.
I see.
Story out there. So we, in our exhibit last year, we tried to show artifacts and different things to show the three versions of John Henry. And we have our curator actually took people on tours and walked them through to help explain how all that came together and how those stories came about. and then actually showed newspaper articles and photos and other things that, and all the three men were named John Henry, you know.
I'll be darned.
It's real interesting. It's kind of fun.
That
you know?
Is fascinating. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that's coming up, you mean, when you're going to...
Yeah, we'll do it again because it was such a hit.
Oh, that's right. It's already happened.
Yeah,
but
it happened
you might
last year this time. Yeah.
It might be. Whenever that movie comes out, it might be a good time to kind of tie in.
We're talking to a few people.
I was just curious, did the movie producers ever approach the museum regarding the John Henry?
Usually they want set art, you know.
I see.
And so we are the... the licensed registered owners through the trust. So if they want to use the images, rather the actual art pieces or the images, they have to come through us.
Yes.
And they have. We've been talking to folks.
Okay.
It's just, you know, what they want to do, how they want to do it, and whether we can make that work for us.
Right. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know the John Henry series gets a lot of attention, as well as it should, but there's another famous piece in the collection, Fétiche Fleur.
Mm-hmm.
Which features a African sculpture sitting on a table with an interesting pattern thing. Yeah, I like that piece. And it was interesting because the Harlem Renaissance, as you mentioned, and this is a funny thing about Palmer Hayden. Here he was, the youngest, at least in some accounts anyway, he's the youngest of 12 children born in a little town in Widewater, Virginia, just about an hour and a half south of Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh.
And yet he ends up becoming a key figure in the Harlem Renaissance, as you just mentioned.
Yeah, yeah.
And so part of the Harlem Renaissance was this focus on the part of artists of all kinds, not just visual artists, but poets, et cetera, was to look back at Africa for inspiration. Mm-hmm. And some people point to that particular piece as an example.
We do get a lot of requests for the use of that image, you know, not just for private individuals, but from schools and people who are publishing books, PhD students.
I can imagine. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that's the reason they want to do it. It seems like a pivotal piece in that sense that helps describe him as an Harlem Renaissance painter. But here he was. He is also part of the Harmon Foundation. He wins this award and ends up going to France to study and all that kind of thing. He's just an interesting person to go from a little poor person.
Who knew, right?
In a small town in Virginia, and he becomes a key figure in the Harlem Renaissance. What an incredible journey.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're proud to have that collection. And, you know, as fate would have it, we wound up with it. You know?
And that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure the Smithsonian is regretful they didn't jump on it way back when they had the chance.
They do have, they managed to get a piece or two from other sources. We don't have his entire works.
Right.
But we have the largest collection of his works.
Right. Mm-hmm. And again, that John Henry series is it was an important thing to him.
Yeah.
And he spent so much time researching and actually putting together the series. It's just remarkable. I can't remember now. How many pieces are in the series?
In the John Henry
series?
There are, I believe, 15.
15.
I believe it's 15.
I can't remember off the top.
I should have it grilled in, but I don't.
That's fine.
I think it's about 15.
I was just curious. I couldn't remember. I was trying to call it up to my memory, but just wouldn't come. So aside from the John Henry series and aside from the Hayden collection, is there any other standout parts of the museum collection?
Well, Dr. Lewis, I give her credit on top of credit. She traveled the world not only collecting paintings, but sculpture pieces, masks. We have a huge collection of masks from across the African diaspora,
mm-hmm.
from, you know, not only Africa, but South America, Central, even Mexico.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the one thing we do is, I don't believe in storing things and hiding, putting it away.
Yeah.
Pull that out, let the public see it.
Sure.
Let it, when people walk by, wonder. You can see them stopping and thinking, where'd that come from? Or what is that? What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind... Pardon me. That's what we want to create, you know, inspire people to think about things. Thanks mm-hmm. to Dr. Lewis, the fact that she reached out and understood early on. I think she was on cutting edge in terms of acquiring a collection of art, not just paintings, but again, the sculpture pieces, the mask and artifacts. And we have most of that stuff. Not all, but most of it is mm-hmm. still there for viewing purposes. People can come in, and we do get travelers from around the world who found us literally, and they come in hordes sometimes, groups of 25, 30 people.
Oh, that's great.
Sweden, from Japan, and from all around to see all of these works. And we hang them. They're actually on display.
How do they find out about the museum?
Internet.
There you go.
There you go. There you go. They've come to Los Angeles. And I will say, you know, L.A. is a destination place. People want to see Hollywood. They want to connect the dots between the people that they see in these movies and on TV. But they'll get on the internet and they'll want to find museums,
right,
or galleries or places where they can see and touch and feel.
Mm-hmm.
And they have found us, you know. And we try to reach out. I mean, we're a small museum, as you know,
right,
compared to the others.
Mm-hmm.
But we like to think we're mighty because we're still here after 42 years.
Oh, yeah.
And we bring in what we think are meaningful shows and programming to teach and to entertain.
Mm-hmm.
And so these people come in. I know I stereotype, you know. One of my hats back in corporate America was head of corporate diversity affairs for these corporations,
mm-hmm,
including Sempra Energy and the Disney Corporation. And so, you know, this is about pulling people together, you know, of all ethnicities and backgrounds and things. So here comes this group of young Black men, about 25 of them. And, you know, on first pass, no biggie, mm-hmm, you know, except after listening to them for a minute, I couldn't understand what they were saying. I said, this is not Spanish. This is not, you know, I'm running through my head. What language could they be speaking?
Yeah.
Couldn't figure it out. Well, soon after they all got in, this woman came trailing behind them. And it turns out that she's a translator from UCLA.
Oh.
UCLA offers some kind of translation service where when groups of travelers come in who don't speak English and they want to tour the city, they can retain, you know, one of these persons. It turns out these young men, although they were all Black and not mistakably all Black, you know, dark, yeah, skin.
Right.
But they were Swedish.
They were Swedish.
Swedish.
And they were speaking their native language.
Their native language. They didn't speak English.
They didn't speak English at all.
Not at all. You know, and so I'm like, wow. You know, so I mean,
trying to wrap your head around,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, here I am stereotyping, thinking they're just some local group of Black kids from California,
yeah,
or whatever. But
yes.
But yeah, I say all that to say that that's just one of many. But they found us through the internet. They wanted to travel Crenshaw Boulevard. You know,
yeah,
Crenshaw has its own stereotypes.
Right.
And they wanted to come into the mall. They wanted to see, touch, feel, and get a feel for the whole community and all the ethnicity, all the things that come along with that. And
yeah,
so that's not unusual. But and they all go away with ahas because of Dr. Lewis and the forefathers. Dr. Lewis is still alive.
I was going to ask you about.
Yes, she is.
She, are you still in communication with her?
Yeah, from time to time. She didn't come into the museum much anymore. She's still out there teaching.
Yes.
And but she's in her late 90s.
Yeah.
But I'm just amazed that she still gets around. And you know,
well, she's a remarkable person and really key to the African American art,
absolutely,
history. I mean, authoring books, starting
papers,
the museum.
Starting the museum.
Starting
influencing others.
Yes.
You know?
Black Arts Quarterly that morphed into International Review of African American Art.
There you go.
I mean, she's really key to the whole thing, yeah, especially not just in Los Angeles, yeah, though, but I think all the way across the U.S. But as you say, world traveler,
going to
all these different places and bringing
research,
artifacts back.
Speaker,
to part of
still doing all of that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. That's quite remarkable.
Yeah.
Now, going back to the history of the museum, I know there was like a little period there where the museum was kind of struggling a little bit in terms of it just wasn't open and available. I'm guessing, and you can please fill me in, but part of what you did was to come in and kind of revive the museum. Is that an accurate way to put it? Or?
Well, you I can't the, take you, all the credit.
You and the others. You and
yeah,
the others.
Absolutely. Well, there's been lots of trials and tribulations along the way, one of which is that we're located inside of the Macy's department store.
Right.
And they have been fabulous partners with us all these years. You know, all the predecessor stores and the executives. And from time to time, when the corporate holding company changes hands, we have to do a little song and dance for the
to explain,
yeah,
the why suits, they should keep you.
Wait, the suits come in, right, from,
uh-huh,
New York or Ohio, wherever corporate headquarters is. They're like, we have a museum inside of a departments, one of our stores.
Yeah.
And then they come in, and then we've got to show them why there is merit here, why there is value in having us in their location.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've had to do that over years. And then as the strategic direction changes for these stores, and not just Macy's, but retail stores, you know, it's changing. They're competing online. You know, people don't come into stores so much anymore.
Right.
Except this store is probably still one of the, I'm told by the leadership that it's still one of the top sellers in the nation, at the top 10 for Macy's. So therefore, we're good for now. But over the years, we've had to ebb and tide with not only what's going on with our partner,
mm-hmm.
but the condition of the building itself. Mm-hmm. One year, probably 2014, we had a horrible rain, storm, and flood that flooded the whole storage area of our museum.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah. We
jeopardizing the art.
We lost some papers and things. We didn't lose any of the Palmer Hayden or any of that.
But the archival stuff?
Yes. Lots of it is gone. Mm. You know, that because it was paper.
Sure.
And it was, a preset of digital stuff. We didn't have anything digitized in those days.
I see.
And so that, and because the building itself suffered such damage and that whole floor, we shut down for about 6 months.
Uh-huh.
During that period, so they could clean out, dig out, and dry out. All of that went wrong.
Right.
I mean, while that, it had nothing to do with us personally. I mean, it shut our business down.
Right.
So then there's been money problems over the years, up and down, winding, you know.
Yes.
So we've had to change our strategic direction. We had to change some of our, even our mission, and a little bit, and just a whole approach to reaching out to funders, donors, corporations, foundations, you know, so we restarted basically.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So was when you say alter the mission, so was that the part of the mission that you changed to reach out in a different way to different sources?
Well,
how did it change?
Well, the philosophy around that definitely changed. Yeah. And then the flavor of art changed as well. I mean, it was cyclical, you know, back in the day, Black Power and the Black movies and the athletes and the entertainers, everybody was, and then, you know, things changed.
Yeah.
Cycle, you know, I call it cyclical, up and down. What's hot
then
was not for a while. And then, you know, so we weren't selling art the way we had been in the past, and people weren't valuing this is my interpretation of all of this, because you arguably get some other comments from other people on what happened here and there.
Sure.
But, you know, art is very cyclical, and what is popular today wasn't maybe a few years ago.
Yeah.
You know that?
No, as an observer.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, we've had to deal with all of those changes and make some adjustments, you know, with how we do. We went from being open 7 days a week to 6 days a week to now 4 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
So we did some studies to see when our foot traffic is heaviest.
Okay.
And we practically get no one on a Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, right, unless we create a special program of some sort that brings people in. So we are only open 4 days a week.
Okay.
And we also looked at the time, except around the holidays, we're open 12 noon to 5 p.m., unless we have special event in there where we have a special event in there where, you know, we need to stay open along with store hours, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we look at what's happening, not only for us, but also with Macy's, and we have to continue. Again, the partnership, they've been great partners with us and for us. But, you know, sooner or later, we know we will be looking for a new home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wouldn't be prudent on our part if we didn't think.
No,
we don't know. Right.
Plan ahead for every contingency.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of exactly. A lot of what if scenarios, you know, we've created along the way. But we're still pumping. You know, people still come. We usually process at least 10,000 people per year through our doors.
Oh, that's wonderful.
You know, and for me, I'm most proud about the youngsters who come in and go, oh, my God. Oh, I love this. Oh, I didn't know this. Oh, you know, and this whole sense of pride. And
that's reassuring.
So that's kind of where we're kind of steering to, is education and the connection between STEAM programs, for example, science, technology, engineering, art, and math. Uh-huh. There's an interconnection with all of those disciplines to everyday living experience. Yeah. And so we are trying to help connect the dots for the kids, for the schools, so that not only they'll be inspired by the fact that there is a connection, if they actually see that connection, maybe it'll spark a fire so they can aspire to higher education, which will lead to better jobs,
right,
which will lead to, you know, economic development in your community that you live in.
Yes.
And all of that, you know.
So you mentioned that before, earlier too, about the schools you guys reach out to. So is this every level of school, elementary, yeah, junior high, I mean, not junior high, I don't use that term anymore, middle school,
middle
high
school, high school, and we get college groups
college
coming
groups
through as
well.
Yeah. But we do focus on middle and high school.
Middle and high school.
The babies come in and, you know, they usually, we get a lot of children during Black History Month. Well, you mentioned Palm and Hayden, and the last time we had a elementary school group come through, we had Palmer Hayden up, and there's one of the paintings called Hog Killing Days. Now, you have to be old enough to know what that is.
Yes.
And you have to have a Southern orientation or Midwest orientation to,
yes,
understand what that is.
Right.
But the little one was like, Mama, what is that? You know, what is that? What did they do to the cow? He thought it was a cow hanging. It was a pig.
It was a pig, yeah.
Yeah. And so just the whole learning and connecting the dots between grandma, mama, and the kid, and then, you know, things that they did, you know, 50 years ago, raising their own food and,
yeah,
you know, killing their own pig.
Sure.
And, you know,
I know my grandfather and grandmother, the same. They're from, my mother is from Virginia, and
yeah,
I remember usually it was in October.
Yep.
It would be hog killing day.
Hog killing day.
And
you know,
the scary thing was, I think the hogs understood what was coming too.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, you have to hold the whole disconnect for, if you can't personalize the farm animals were raised to be
food.
Food.
Yeah.
Right. But our kids, they go to the grocery store.
And it's wrapped in cellophane.
Right. Exactly. So just connecting that. But so for me, the learning, just watching them learn that this is something that we actually did 50, 100 years ago to feed ourselves.
Which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, kind of like a history lesson almost.
Exactly. Exactly. It is a history lesson.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, you know, we that's what I enjoy and that's what I appreciate and want to continue to connect, even better connect the dots for not only Black kids, people of African descent, but all ethnic groups that come through. And so,
would you say you get a sizable number of non-African
descended
folks?
I would say 40%.
Wow, that's pretty, yeah, substantial.
Yeah, it is. About 40%.
And I know that, okay, so it's in the, what used to be the May Company, now it's Macy's, and that's in Crenshaw Baldwin Hills at the intersection of Crenshaw and Dr. Martin Luther King Boulevard, right?
Correct.
And so, that's almost like the heart of the Black community.
It is now.
I was going to say, has the composition of the community changed at all, or have you noticed?
It is changing. You know, people talk about you know, the changing complexity of Leimert Park, Baldwin Hills, you know, gentrification and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's for me, and I help people understand gentrification is about economics,
mm-hmm,
and so it's not about race, you know, it's about economics. And so, but it's gentrifying big time in that area. A whole revolution of change happening, not only for the mall, but for the whole area. And then there's a project called Destination Crenshaw. You may have heard about coming down Crenshaw Boulevard. I serve as board chair of that project.
Can you say what that is?
That is a 1.1 mile outdoor linear museum. And people call it an art project, but it's really an economic development project. It will start at Slauson,
uh-huh,
Avenue, and it'll to the south, and it'll go north to about Leimert Park.
Oh, okay.
And with that comes just all kind, and it's running parallel to the metro. The metro is also coming through at the same time,
uh-huh,
or thereabouts. And so on both sides of the streets and all around that 1 mile, we'll be creating all kinds of ways to tell the story of Black Los Angeles from the founding fathers to the present and into the future, using all mediums, not just traditional paintings and murals and all kind of stuff people come to think of.
Right.
But also digital things going on. You know, I mean, we're gathering a group of artists I think we have about 50 of them in tow right now. Mm-hmm. A couple of senior curators and people who will tell the stories, you know, from the no-name people to not just our athletes and entertainers who got the big names, but who's the first dentist, black dentist that hit Los Angeles? Wow. What's their story?
Yeah.
You know, who are these low riders? What's that all about with these cars, you know? And you
That's interesting. Yeah. And this will all be, you said, like a museum, but it's outdoor, right?
It's outdoor. It's an outdoor linear, uncovered.
Uncovered.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody driving or walking or whatever.
In fact, we encourage you to. The whole idea is with that metro train coming through, it's connecting LAX to Los Angeles. So the route is such that as they leave LAX, you don't have to get in a car anymore, or you won't have to once this is completed. You can take the metro train. It'll curve and come around through Inglewood, California, and then come down north on Crenshaw Boulevard. Some of it is underground, some of it is above ground. But when it hits hits Lawson and Crenshaw, it's designed to like create a wow, boom, you have arrived at destination Crenshaw.
Oh.
Get off here, and there'll be stores, food, you know, eateries, parks, overviews, overhangs,
wow,
monuments, paintings, murals, digital things. You can read, you can sit. And we have every generation involved in this advisory group, every ethnic group involved, even though it's unapologetically black.
Uh-huh.
The reality is this is to tell the story of black loss and our contributions,
right,
to not only Los Angeles, but to world culture.
And how far along is the project now? I mean,
we're going to ground break at the end of February.
Oh, okay. And so it's starting pretty soon?
It's already started. We've been planning and working in the design work for 2 years.
So when you say groundbreak, in other words,
shovel, dig.
Okay. Wow.
Dig up some dirt and.
And how long do you think it'll be before it's completed?
About a year, because some work has already officially begun. About a year. Originally, it was designed to come together with Metro when they unveil, if you will, the new Metro line coming down Crenshaw. This was going to be, although not the same projects, we have partnered up with them,
right,
in some areas, and because they've got right of way, the city of Los Angeles, you know, it's been quite a partnership,
yeah,
and a mixed breed of people and things. But that only helps our Museum of African American Art because we're at the north end of this project, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a wonderful tie-in.
Mm-hmm. And I'm told that the mall there is looking at undergoing multi-billion-dollar renovation.
Oh, wow.
And tied to all of this, the whole area.
It's just the whole area. If you were up in a helicopter looking down on you would see.
The Mert Park is undergoing things right now.
They've
torn down some things. They're building new complexes. New sites are coming. Just the whole Crenshaw Boulevard is going to be where it's at. And it will be, Destination Crenshaw will be for L.A., what Harlem, at least when you think of Harlem, is for New York.
Like Harlem.
An icon like that.
Back in the 20s and 30s, the heyday of Harlem.
Exactly.
It'll be similar to that.
Exactly.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, I'm so excited about all of that, you know? As a native Californian, I'm really...
So, by the way, you were born and raised in L.A. or?
In San Fernando Valley. I tell people I'm the original Valley girl. I have 10 brothers, one sister, and people ask me, how did you get involved with this whole ethnic thing, you know, managing diversity and all that? And I said, we didn't know what that was back in my day. You know, I said, I was born in Pacoima in a house. And if you think of a block, two streets that come together.
Yeah.
We had 12 kids. Across the street from us was the Takauchi family. It was 13 of them. They're Japanese.
Uh-huh.
12 girls, one boy. And then across the street from them, just think of four corners.
Yeah.
Over here was the Tapia family, a Mexican family, 11 of them.
Wow.
And then across the street from us over here was a white family, the Johnsons, and it was 10 of them.
Well, I mean, that's just a remarkable thing. I mean,
all up and down the street. That wasn't not an unusual story.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Not only large families in each case, but in each case also a different ethnic group.
Yeah, it was about economic. It wasn't about race in those days. My folks came from Louisiana and Texas and did not stop in L.A. proper,
mm-hmm,
although that's still considered part of L.A. city limits. They went to the valley where they could buy cheaper land and more property with these big families. You know?
Right. Mm-hmm. And how did everybody get along?
You know, my best friend was Del Takauchi.
Wow.
The little Japanese girl.
Yeah.
And I remember when we were kids, as kids do, she and I got into a kid spat, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I thought I could beat her up because I was a big girl. You know, I grew tall quickly and, you know, little Japanese girl, right? I thought I could beat her up. So we got into a little titty tat and I'm going to push her around. Well, she dusted me up on the on the concrete outside, and I'm mad at her because her dad taught her judo. That's what they used to teach in those days.
She used martial arts on you.
On me. And so I got mad at her and I called her the N-word, you know.
Oh my goodness.
So now I didn't know I was the N-word. We knew it was a bad word.
You just knew it was an epithet, right?
Yeah. And so her mom heard, she came out and she spanked me. Uh-huh. And then she took me home to my mom and she spanked me. And Dale and I were like, what the heck? Whatever that was, man, don't ever say that word again, you know. So it's like, you know, and of course, best friends again, you know. Yeah. So, we didn't know what that was. And even as you fast forward, when I was 16, Martin Luther King and others came through the valley trying to get us kids for the Freedom Rides, you know. Mm-hmm. And our parents wouldn't let us go. They were from Texas and Louisiana, and they were like, oh, no.
They were probably trying to be protective, I'm guessing, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's rich, you know, even though, you know, we were low income, all those kids, you know, my family were hardworking people. All of them were. All the families are hardworking folks, blue collar, and, you know, feeding their kids and trying to make it, you know.
But what a wonderful story and proof that it's possible
for
people to coexist and get along.
Absolutely.
And respect each other and their backgrounds.
Absolutely.
What a great example.
And you don't have to apologize for who you are. I don't care what your ethnicity is. This is America, right?
Right.
This is what people want to come here for.
I'm glad you said that because I think it's really important to celebrate who we are. And it's not as a way of putting anybody else down. It's just a way of acknowledging and respecting. Yeah. Yourself, really.
Respecting yourself and others.
Yes, and others. Well, I think respecting yourself helps you to respect others.
You have to start there.
Yeah.
If you don't respect yourself, you don't like yourself, you don't value yourself, then how can you know how to value anybody else, you know?
Yeah, and I know, looking at my own history and starting up my gallery, part of what motivated me was to this mission in my own head to let everybody know what they might be missing in African-American art.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if that has played any part in your own mission in terms of the museum and African-American art. Letting everybody know this is something that you should notice. And
you should know and you should to gravitate to. And for me, like I said early on, I'm not an artist. You know, I'm pretty good with color. Mm-hmm. You know, I have an eye for putting things that complement each other together. But that's about as far as it goes, you know. But when I learned about ways to express yourself and ways that we can tell our story, some people write, some people dance. Yes, we know we have our athletes who are, you know, the great, like Kobe Bryant and others who have made. My dad was played in the Negro Leagues, baseball.
Baseball.
Yeah.
Oh, really? And which team, by the way?
It was a Texas team called Wildcats.
Okay.
But it was he left me well before I was born.
Yeah.
But my point of saying that is when he moved to we moved to San Fernando Valley, and he did, he started coaching. And so he coached
baseball
because he didn't get to live his dream. But he left Louisiana because they were going to hang him down there because he did not want to work in the rice fields and do manual labor. He had he wanted to be a musician. He sang and he played baseball. So none of that actually came to fruition and to the degree that he wanted it to. But the point is that here are these no-name people who aspire and who are good at things that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, in terms of your question, how do we all express who we are and be real to ourselves,
yes.
You know? And so that was always, as I came along, I had to grow with this. It was a business as far as I was concerned when I first came on the various boards looking at this. But along the way, I said, we have a story to tell.
Yeah.
And it's a good story. And there's huge contributions that people of African descent and others have made. You know, I was with a group of youngsters yesterday, and I shared with them. I learned this through some of the exhibits that we had presented along the way. One of them was called Where Black is Brown. and the contributions in Mexico. So one of the things I learned was that what is now Beverly Hills, way back when, was owned by a black woman.
Really?
The land that is now Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. You know, and Senor Pico, Pico Boulevard, and, you know, there's right. lots of things. He was an African, you know, or of African descent. You know, really? So, you know, and things like the state of California, Califia, you may have heard those stories, mm-hmm. Used to be thought of as a myth, but now they've discovered artifacts and things to say that she actually existed. Well, the state of California was named
after
Califia.
Mm-hmm. I see.
So, I mean, and they were like, wow, I didn't know that, you know, and now there's this pride thing. You could see it kind of welling up in them.
Yes.
Know?
Wow. And would that, by the way, would that be part of what's told in the Crenshaw?
Yes.
Okay.
That and more.
I was just curious to see how far back it went.
They'll go back as far, you know. It's just amazing the stories that you're going to enjoy.
That's wonderful.
Because, and that everyone can appreciate.
Yeah, that's the thing that everyone can appreciate because yeah. it's part of the history of the area.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the lobby of the Golden State Mutual Insurance Company, those two murals
yep.
were doing similar thing,
yep.
telling the story all the way back from when.
Right.
This was
right.
part of Spain, I right. guess, and then
there'll
Mexico.
Be murals in this project, but there'll be hard paintings, again, digital stuff, Disneyland kind of stuff, Epcot Park kind of stuff. You
right.
know, it's going to be for every taste bud, because not everyone will want to stand and stare and look at a painting
right.
and try to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you relate to them in a digital way, especially the youngsters coming in, then you got their number.
Yeah.
Know? So anyway, stay tuned to this.
Yeah, no, I think that's important.
Mm-hmm.
And that raises a question that I was just wondering, you've gone over some of the challenges that you face as a part of the museum and so forth, dealing with the Macy's executives and the change of executives and so forth. You got to start all over again when there's mm-hmm. a new set. But I was just wondering if there were any other challenges that you could talk about and making the museum successful in its mission?
Money is always a challenge, raising money, because we are free and open to the public. And that's one part of our mission is to remain free, no fee, nothing, no admittance, free right. to get in. And we like saying you got free parking. Where can you park free in Los Angeles these days?
Right.
And admittance is free. And you can come to a place that's family friendly, all age groups. Mm-hmm. But money is always, you know, we operate. We are a small business, so we need.
And you sell the art too, by the way.
We do sell the art. We have a gift shop mm-hmm. where you can buy all sorts of Afrocentric books and artifacts, jewelry, collectibles, you name it,
mm-hmm.
Posters. We just got a lot of people are calling us lately because of Kobe's passing. They're looking for memorabilia, you mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. and so we have some, you know, not a whole lot, but we may get more, you know, just to address the need, you know.
Right.
But we look for donors. We're looking for membership. We are a membership organization. You can join the Museum of African American Art for as little as $40 per year, which is a deal nowadays.
Oh my goodness, there's not many things you could pay $40 a year and
right.
be a member of.
And for that, you can, you know, you have access to the museum and all the activities that we hold there, and there's no charge and to get in. And you can, again, family friendly. A lot of people like to come after church and bring the family
sure.
and, you know, spend some time looking at whatever the current show is, as well as the other art that's hanging in, and, you know, throughout the museum facilities.
And I should point out that you're looking for donors. And of course, I'm thinking you're talking about institutions
absolutely.
And then individuals. And so
absolutely.
Let's encourage that to take place. But even persons coming in, I know no
have a
amount,
donation box.
Yeah. No amount is too small.
Nope.
Right. I mean,
yeah.
just
I tell people I'm like James Brown, baby, 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 please, please, please.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Everything helps
right.
to keep things moving. That's,
right.
that's fantastic. And I guess we should just stop for a second and express our condolences to the Bryant family for
absolutely
his passing and the passing of his daughter. What a tragedy. And to the family and friends of all the other persons.
Yeah, the entire, it's a real tragedy, especially as I'm looking at the news and it, you know, they're trying to figure out what caused the accident.
Yes.
And now they're saying there's some device that should have been on the helicopter.
That wasn't.
We don't know. I mean,
right.
but at the end of the day, it's still a tragedy
yeah,
for all the families.
Right, the
so,
bottom line.
Absolutely.
A lot of folks lost their lives, and mm-hmm. so it's a sad thing. So just wanted to make sure to respect that and acknowledge it. Any other challenges when it comes to the museum?
We invite, not necessarily a challenge, but we invite people to come of all, again, age groups and backgrounds, come and enjoy. We're open Thursday through Sunday, 12 noon to 5 p.m. Those are our normal hours. And then when we have special events, there are extended hours. So, but as a member, you get to know what those are.
Ah.
Yep. We've got, you know, plays coming up. We do theater parties, as long as there's content that educate and raise awareness about specific issues. So we got some things coming on.
Mm-hmm.
We invite people to go to our website, www.maaala.org, and check us out.
Hey, let's repeat that one more time for everybody listening. Please tell
www.maaala.org.
Thank you. Thank you. And please visit the website and special events. So what are some of the things that have happened in the past that the museum, I know.
Well, one thing we have that I would like to invite people to consider is we're taking a group of people to Senegal, Africa in May.
Okay.
Now, it's not a free trip, you know, but it's a package deal that's very, very lean in terms of expense. And so you can learn more about that on the website. So we would encourage people who may be interested in going to see the new museum in Senegal.
That's why I was going to ask you, so why Senegal?
Because there's a new museum, among other things, there's a new museum of African or Black civilization there. And it where you can go, where this group will go and learn and have special tours and see things like how people came over on the boats back in slavery times. Mm-hmm. And just, I haven't been, so I don't know what all we're going to see.
Yes.
But this new museum was the destination place. But then there'll be some adjunct tours along the way as a part of the package. And so we are encouraging people to, you know, consider joining us on that tour.
That sounds like a wonderful trip.
That's a major thing, yeah. Yeah. We've been doing some things with, as you may know, Terry McMillan.
Yes.
She's got a new book coming out. We've been doing a book signing with her in May.
Okay.
Early May. So we'll stay tuned to that.
Stay tuned.
You know, we'll be putting out announcements about that.
That's fantastic.
We'll be putting out the Palmer Hayden collection probably in the summer.
Okay.
Or at least a portion of it. We're working on a new show around it because it's so popular. People increasingly so are asking to see and learn more about the Palmer Hayden collection. So,
and I would strongly recommend checking that out. It's worth the time and effort to get over there. And guess what? You don't have to pay to park.
You don't have to pay.
You don't have to pay to get in.
Boom.
It's a slam dunk. Anything else that's coming up?
Let's see. I mentioned the play. We're doing we do a lot of those theater parties that are minor, small fundraisers for us.
Okay.
But
when you say theater parties, so is there a theater that takes place at the museum?
Or? Sometimes it takes place at the museum, and sometimes we partner with the Center Theater Group, downtown LA, the Music Center Group's theaters to present. But this one coming up is at the Nate Holden Theater. And we're doing
which is not very far from the museum, right?
Right. This is called Veils the Musical. It's being presented. Executive producer is Sandra Evers Manley. And she is bringing in this play from D.C. And it'll be March 13th, 14th, and 15th. We're hosting a theater party on the 14th, a matinee.
Okay.
But the tickets are for sale. Again, you can learn more about that on the website.
Okay.
But that's coming up. So we invite people to join us there. It's again, a small fundraiser for us, but also the subject matter is very interesting and appealing, we think. And we invite you to consider joining us for that project. So that's coming down the pike. We've got Black History Month coming up. We've got lots of schools coming in to tour. And if if you're interested in learning how you may bring your own kids in, then again, contact us.
Fantastic.
We're listed. And let's talk about how we can bring more children. That's been a major objective of ours for this year, 2020, is to get more young people in to learn about their history and culture.
Mm-hmm. In the past, I think I remember some famous folks coming in for book signings. I mean,
oh God,
can you run down some of the folks that have been in there to do book signings?
Good. Let's see. Well, we mentioned Terry McMillan.
She will be doing hers.
We've done all of hers.
And so you've done her in the past.
We've done all of hers. In fact, she just donated a chair from one of the books that went movie And that's Stella Got a Groove Back. So there's a chair that she got.
Is that the chair that Whitney Houston sat in when she was playing?
That's right.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah.
And I went brain dead on, you asked me that question, and now I can't think of who all, but you named that most of the Black artists and writers have been either through there, Maya Angelou, we have such a history.
It's a long,
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we have archives that are out so that people may see some of the folks who have either presented books or their own art.
Yes. I'm
surprised how many of the actors and entertainers also have a flair for the for painting, you know.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Can you think of any off the top of your head?
Billy Dee Williams, let me think. Richard Roundtree.
Wow.
There's been some, you know, some of the old school ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we should point out, by the way, that the museum has also published a catalog with the Hayden collection, right?
That's right. We do have a catalog available.
Yeah.
For sale.
and there's others too, other publications. Am I right? I mean, a handful of them.
We have a little conference room that's really kind of a resource room as well.
Uh-huh.
The people may come in and look at various publications that actually go back to, some of them go back to 1976. And so it's a good place for a student who's interested in art history or African-American history and art to come and spend some time looking through the publications. And, you know, when any of the staff persons are available who know about these things, they're happy to spend time with them and talk through it, you know. So, yeah, come and explore.
Yeah, I was going to say, what a great resource.
Yeah, come and explore, you know.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you have up some photographs by a photographer.
John Simmons.
John Simmons.
Yes.
So can you tell us a little bit about that?
The John Simmons is a Emmy Award-winning photographer and videographer, and he has taken these photos, and it's a beautiful exhibit, black and white, of just candid shots from black youth and adults from around the country.
And some of them go back in time quite a bit, right?
Quite a ways back. I mean, he's got the old cars that go back to the 50s, and, you know, he's been at this for close to 30 years.
And he's still alive, right?
He's still alive and still working, you know, on various projects in the movie industry. So we invite you to come and see that. That show will be up. It's called No Crystal Stair. Mm-hmm. And these photos are for sale.
Oh, the photos themselves and the show are for sale.
Are for sale.
Okay.
Right? And they're quite collectible. There's a couple of them. I'm like, how can I buy that and sneak it in past the family, you know?
That's right.
Yeah, amazing. They're amazing.
Well, that's the thing. I saw the show and I was impressed, and I recommend everybody check it out. All black and white.
All black and
white. Very nicely done. Yeah. And from different parts of the South too. Tennessee, I think I remember
Tennessee,
seeing.
Georgia. You remember that one? Yeah.
Yeah,
from all around. Yeah,
all around.
Chicago, Detroit. He said major hubs where, you know, there's been large black, you know, groups or people living in those areas. But also, some of them are just like, there's one of a kid wearing two different shoes, you know, that struck me because as a kid, when, you know, growing up with all those large families, sometimes you know, one shoe went that way and the dog took the other shoe out the door. And
right.
It just rang memories for me, you know. So I think people would enjoy just seeing it, let alone if they're interested in seeing one that they want to purchase, they are for sale. You know?
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
So anything else going on at the museum we should be aware of?
Well, stay tuned and keep an eye on the website. As new things come up, because we're in the planning for several projects that are coming down the pike.
Mm-hmm.
So not quite ready to reveal what those are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But stay tuned, check the website. And, you know, we do Twitter, we do Facebook and all of that, you know.
Well, that's good to stay current because, as you mentioned earlier, keeping young people interested kind of forces you to go this route
with
social media. And
I'm learning something in that area. I'm one of those old fogies, you know, like, okay, you do it for me and tell me which button to push.
Right. So, I'm just trying to think now with the museum, is there anything else in the collection, by the way, you wanted to spotlight? You had mentioned before some of the things that, Simela, you know, collected from different parts of the world. And we've got the John Henry series.
We have,
is there anything else?
We've got, rather than try to name all them,
mm-hmm.
I invite people to come and see. We've got a stunning Charles White. And it, you have to know who some of these painters are.
Yeah.
Well,
the good thing about him, I mean, he just had this wonderful show that traveled around and mm-hmm. And was at L.A. County Museum there for a while. So that
And people have come through. Bell. Matter of fact, our local, if we are of a mind to sell that one, that would be
you could sell it.
Really sell it.
Easily,
you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. But, it's a nice drawing.
Yeah, it's a nice one. And so there are, fortunately, Samela collected these when I guess they were not as well known as they are today. But having...
Oh, absolutely. I'm imagining back when did she obtain that particular drawing? Because I just know from experience dealing with collectors that bought his work, say, back when near the time when he created it, mm-hmm. they were buying it for like $6,000-$8,000.
Yeah.
And now his works fetch millions in many cases.
Okay, right.
Some of the better drawings are close to $2 million.
Right.
It's pretty phenomenal to see the change.
So we have that, you know, you probably could name more of them than I can.
Yeah.
You know,
so there's a wide variety.
It is a huge wide variety.
Of African-American artists that everybody.
African descent artists, because we've got a collection of art from the Caribbean.
Oh.
A good 10 pieces that all from the same artist.
Yes.
And then there's a couple of pieces from South America.
Mm-hmm.
And then you may be interested to know that even with that, the Palmer Hayden collection over the years has traveled either one or two pieces or some of the pieces. It's been at the Queen's Gallery in England.
Wow.
It's been at the Vatican.
No way. Been to the Vatican.
Yeah.
Wow, that is exciting.
Yeah. Things like that. So people, you know, and it even that process has been really interesting to me, especially when it went to the Queen's Gallery. They flew a person in to accompany the painting. And the person was like the handcuff kind of thing, you
right,
know,
right.
handcuffed to that.
Personally assuring the safe delivery.
That's right. And so that was an interest, because for me, I'd never participated in a process where we loan out a piece like that to a state, you know, a country.
Sure.
And and then they actually, it was there for about 3 months. And this was the, Midnight Summer Night. That's it.
Oh,
Midsummer Night in Harlem.
Night in Harlem. That's right. That's mm-hmm. also, I neglected to mention that. That's another famous
painting. That's a real favorite one.
Yeah, yeah. That one's definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the cream of the crop. I mean, Samela definitely set up the museum
very
well.
She set it up. You know, she set it up. And, you know, we've been approached by lots of the others. Why don't you let us incorporate you into us, you know?
The old acquisition attempts.
Yeah. Not yet. You know, when... If we ever get desperate, it's good to know we have options.
Oh, that's right. The options are increasing, apparently.
Yeah. You know, so we're pleased, and I'm very very proud that she had the foresight and forethought to go and collect where maybe others didn't even know we could or should. Yes. You know,
well, that's wonderful. Well, Berlinda, thank you so much for spending time and coming out here to the gallery to talk to us about the museum and. Yourself, really appreciate it. And I
thank you for having me.
Yes, and I'm strongly encouraging everybody to visit the gallery, visit the museum, I should say.
Yep, Museum of African American Art, 4005 Crenshaw Boulevard, Los Angeles.
Excellent, you got that. And also the website one more time, be sure to visit
www.maaala.org.
Excellent. So take advantage of this wonderful opportunity, everybody. I encourage you. And with that, we'll close. Don't forget to subscribe. And thank you again for sharing your perspective, Berlinda.
Thank you for having me.
And that concludes another episode of Eric's Perspective. Thank you.